Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 450. In this episode, Scott talks with Google engineer Erica Joy about her work history and what it really means to have a diverse workplace.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Erica Joy, who's an engineer at Google. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Scott. How are you today?
I am very well. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
We've been on Google Plus for a while now. Kind of orbiting people who orbit each other, kind of like, oh, there's that person again.
Yeah.
And I've noticed, we have lots of shared interests in film and comics and all these kind of things. So, and of course, as engineers, but you recently posted this piece on Medium. Called The Other Side of Diversity. And
I did.
It got a lot of response. Mostly positive?
Mostly positive for sure. There are some pockets of the internet, Reddit, a little bit of Hacker News where it wasn't so positive, but I didn't read too much of those comments, never read the comments.
Never, ever read the comments.
I believe in that.
And I thought it'd be interesting to talk to you about, kind of your come up. Like, how did you start? When was your first interaction with computers and your relationship with computers?
So my first interaction with computers that I can remember was when I was around 7. My mom had a computer at our house in Florida. And I remember her showing me QBasic, and I poked around with that as a 7-year-old. I remember the black and green screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there a sense of like, I'm exploring something or I'm this power here? Or did you have any sense of what you're doing? You're just poking buttons.
There was no sense of that. I was just poking buttons and pressing, 10 and 20 and all that stuff. Typical basic stuff. But I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just playing around, My mom pretty much just sat me in front of it just to give me something to do, I think. I didn't really begin to love computers until I went to this HyperCard workshop as a 10-year-old. It was when I was living in Alaska. And for some reason, my school decided to send me to this workshop that was, 30 miles away. And I got to play with HyperCard as a 10-year-old. And that's when I fell in love with it.
You just got sent off as like a talented and gifted kind of thing? Like, they put me on the bus and they were like, you're different. You should go do this.
Yeah, I was in gifted and talented classes, so it might have been related to that. I just remember they put me in a cab. A 10-year-old me was like, oh my gosh, I'm riding in a cab all by myself. And they put me in a cab and sent me 30 miles away to this thing.
And was that, and you say that was when you fell in love with computers, like that was the moment for you?
Yep, I remember it vividly. I remember using HyperCard and LaserDisc to put together something that might have looked something like a web page before web pages were a thing, maybe.
HyperCard was so ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was. It was so fun. I just remember I was doing a thing on diamonds and the Hope Diamond was what my LaserDisc was about. And it was just, as 10-year-old me was just like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, because it was like PowerPoint, but you're making a stack of cards, you're building up knowledge, and it was like a little web of 3x5 cards.
Exactly. And it was fun. And I wanted to take it home with me, but there was no HyperCard at my house.
Yeah. They relating to that story a little bit, I grew up in Portland in kind of a middle class, lower middle class neighborhood, and there was only one computer.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone wanted to take it home, but I was the troublemaker.
Right.
And they had like meetings about me. I don't know if they had meetings about you as well.
Oh, there was one meeting that was just really phenomenal. It was in high school and it was around the time, this is still in Alaska. It was around the time where I was really getting into computing and I was exploring the world of like hacking and freaking. And I had these silly little scripts on my computer, like on my directory at school, because that was the smartest thing to do.
For people who don't know, it's for messing with phones, hacking phones.
Yeah. And so I had the Rainbow books saved on my directory at school, as well as, you know, silly little scripts. And so I get called to the office one day and I'm like, what's this about? And did someone send me something? You know, I was clueless. I had no idea. So I get to the office and there's my mom and my dad, the school principal, the superintendent, the guy who runs IT for the entire school district, and the military police, because I went to school on a military base.
Holy mackerel.
Oh, yeah. And it was like, what is this? What's happening right now? And they're like, sit down, we need to talk. And, you know, sit down, we need to talk. It's always bad. It's never good. And so it turns out that someone had hacked the principal's computer. And I eventually found out who that someone was, but it wasn't me. But they thought it was because of the files that I had sillily like stored in that directory on my computer at school. So
that they said she's the techie, so she must have been the one that broke in.
She's the techie with the rainbow books and the
explain stuff what the rainbow books mean to people who may not be familiar.
The rainbow books are just stuff for freaking, like they tell you how to, you know, hack phones essentially.
Right. Back in the day when we had pay phones, for people who may not remember this, there were ways to get free long distance calls, break into AT&T. Like you would basically be as if you were the telephone operator, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never like did anything too advanced with that stuff because that like put a stop to it. I was like, never again. I'm not going to be called to the principal's office and get threatened with expulsion, ever again. So I was done.
While you were telling that story, I was like, I've had that meeting. Like, okay, the teacher, yes. The principal, mm-hmm. yes. Superintendent, I'm like, I'm right there. Military police? No, I never had the military police. So you win.
I'm sorry.
I got the superintendent.
Yeah.
And they made a joke that I was most going to be voted most likely to be convicted of a white collar crime.
Oh, nice. Well, you still got time.
I still have time. And they loaned me the computer.
Basically,
we made a deal with my fifth grade teacher that Friday nights, my dad could back the pickup truck up to the place, borrow the computer for the weekend as long as it was back by Sunday night and they would not tell anyone.
Oh, wow.
And that kept me off the streets.
Well, there you go. You weren't in any danger of being a hoodlum because you had the computer that you had to put on the pickup truck.
Pretty much. I mean, I was like, oh, God, it was like a $2,000 computer. Like, it was worth more than the pickup truck.
I think
we drove that truck about 5 miles an hour because we did not want to break the computer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that was probably likely back then.
So you made HyperCards and now you're 10.
Yeah, I was 10. I didn't really do much with computers aside from the standard, you know, computer class stuff, and playing, you know, Carmen Sandiego and Oregon Trail, etc.
That was the best.
Oh God, wasn't it? Those are the good games. Like, where is Carmen Sandiego now? Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, Scott?
But I do know that. So they made a Walking Dead version of Oregon Trail in Flash.
Shut up, really?
Oh my goodness. So go and Google for Oregon. Mm-hmm. Trail.
Oregon Trail?
Oregon, like O-R-G-A-N.
Okay.
And it's basically the cast of The Walking Dead on the Oregon Trail. And it's like, you know,
I'm dying right now.
Yeah, don't play it now. We're doing a podcast.
Oh, I'm not going to play it, but I'm looking at it. I can see
yes,
it. But
it's fabulous. Amazing. Yes. Yeah. So then you have to drive your truck across, you know, across the Oregon Trail, trying not to get eaten by zombies.
Oh, wow.
So, did you think you were a programmer already at 10?
Oh, I had no idea what programmers were at 10.
But you know what I mean? Like, in your soul, like, was this, you knew you were a builder at least? Because you reveled in the building of this stack.
I was a tinkerer for sure. Like, I used to tinker with things. Like, I'd take apart my toys and put them back together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain if I were allowed to take apart the computer, I would have done that. I took apart my Walkman for sure. I remember that. I remember taking apart my Walkman just to see how it worked, and I put it back together. So yeah, I was a tinkerer. I like to fix things for sure.
That's so important for kids to open stuff up and take it apart and put it back together again.
Yeah, definitely. Because you get a better sense of what you're using. You form a connection once you've taken it apart and put it back together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, that's my thing now. Like, I understand it.
I wonder, it seems to me like, and I don't mean to get all like kids today, but, you know, if the only device you ever open up and look inside is like changing the battery on your Samsung phone, like mm-hmm. how much of a sense of physicality can you have? I mean, an iPad is disposable.
Right.
Nobody opens an iPad up and fixes it.
Well, Apple doesn't want you to.
Yeah.
Like they make their stuff now, so you can't open it up.
Well, and yeah, nothing can be opened up anymore, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always said, like, you know, the whole Jedi builds his own lightsaber thing. Like, you've mm-hmm. built desktop machines. There's something to be said for that. And I'm sad now that I don't have to do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I liked building my machines. That was fun. But, you know, I've always said that if I could run OS X on a PC, mm-hmm. you know,
Hackintosh.
The right way. Yeah, I had a Hackintosh. It's still upstairs, in fact.
awesome.
But if I could run OS X on PCs the right way, I would build like a monster desktop and run OS X on it. Like, it's, yeah, it'd be great.
I built a machine a couple of years back on my blog, and we called it the GOM, G-O-M, God's Own Machine.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So we set a dollar amount. I think it was mm-hmm. $2,000. And it's like, okay, let's all the internet got involved. And we're like, let's see how much computer we can actually build.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It was like six. This is like a couple, 3-4 years ago, 16 gigs of RAM, SSD, i7. Hexacore, like we don't even know what hexacore means, but it's got
but
12,
we're gonna have
you know,
it.
It's good, yeah, exactly. And I'm actually still running that machine now. I've got like 3 monitors, and it's one of those things where you just, oh, you have to add a little more SSD, add a little more memory, you know, that's,
yeah.
And I built it and we water cooled it, you know, like that level of craft. It's a sense of accomplishment.
Right. And I miss that upgradability, right? Like you're still running the same machine because you can add things to it, right? Like I can't upgrade my Mac. Like,
well,
I could maybe throw some RAM in it.
Wait a year till it breaks.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, AppleCare.
So you went through high school, and were you, like, doing the whole Norton Commander thing and check-disking other people's disks and fixing viruses?
No, not in high school. In high school, I was just really – I was the helper in all the computer classes because I always had a lot of free hours. I don't know how that happened. I always wound up in the computer class helping the computer teacher. Her mm-hmm. name is Miss Londo. Yeah. Hi, Miss Londo.
Like Londo Calrissian?
L-O-N-D-O. Yeah.
Okay. Close
but,
enough.
Yeah. I always used to go to her class and just like help out with stuff. And when like, I don't know, whatever silly program wasn't working, I'd have to go fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no Norton or check disking or whatever. They weren't going to have that.
But this is like being the AV geek, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was always threading the projector, you know?
Oh, like,
the projectors had trouble. Let's get Hanselman in there to thread the projector.
Projectors.
You know?
I didn't,
this was floppy disk
sure.
days, right? Moving that 5.25 to 3.5 transition.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Okay, so you're the helper. You're the assistant.
Yep.
But then you kind of started your career in tech in college when you started being... I was beyond college, right? You were the administrator for the University of Alaska, right?
Yeah. I was one of the Windows system administrators there. So the way the University of Alaska works, there is a statewide office that administers the whole University of Alaska system, right? So there's all the different campuses around the state. And I worked in statewide as a Windows system administrator there. And we basically ran the business end of the university.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in the university, you were not only the only woman on the team, but probably one of the few women in the organization. This is like early 2000s.
Yep. There were other women on the team, but there was only one other technical woman on the team. Her name's Laura. She's mm-hmm. amazing. Yeah. She was, I think she did either phones or networking. Networking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And were you the only black woman in the organization at all?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There were no other black women there.
But not to be apologetic, but you were in Alaska.
Yeah, I was in Alaska for sure. And, you know, there were black people there. Like a lot of people. Yeah. It wasn't just me and my family.
I don't know that guy, but.
Yeah. Yeah. There were black people in Alaska, but mostly military. There mm-hmm. were some non-military people there, but yeah. I mean, that's how I wound up there, military, my right. parents. Yeah.
But then you ended up kind of from a racial perspective, at the polar mm-hmm. opposite. You ended up in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
a lot of cool tech, a lot of great companies, and mm-hmm. a lot of black folks.
Yep, for sure. I think the demographics are like 54% African American, mm-hmm. is what they say on Wikipedia. Yeah.
And then you ended up working at a Home Depot.
Yep, at a Home Depot Store Support Center, which is what they call their headquarters. Started there in network operations, and then moved into their desktop support team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when I think about, like diversity, like I would want what I would call representational diversity, like my mm-hmm. team, my org, kind of like expanding out from myself, mm-hmm. me, my team, my org, my division, my company, my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I would want it to look like it's representational of like the area around me.
Right.
If my neighborhood has a certain balance of black and white, but then I go to mm-hmm. work and it's all white people, that would feel weird. It would feel like.
As it would for all black people. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I want that same sort of makeup in my teams. And that's what Home Depot was like. I mean, I read some comment on the internet where, again, never read the comments, where someone like completely misconstrued that bit of my post or like, oh, she just wants to work with black people because she said her whole team was black at, you know, Home Depot. And it's like, no, not even close. My whole team wasn't black. There were a lot of black people. It looked like the rest of Atlanta, right? Like,
yeah.
There are a lot of black people, but then there were some white people and there were some Asian people and there's some Indian people. Like, it was.
Because diversity is about not just what it looks like.
Right.
It's about how everybody thinks.
Yeah.
And you all came from, and you may have been one of the other black women on the team, but you were the only one from Alaska.
Yeah, for sure.
and because your background, I assume, it creates who you are. You think right. for, you think like Erica because right. of all these different things.
Right. Because, you know, I was a military kid who grew up all over the place because I lived in Alaska, because I, you know, lived in South Carolina, which was completely different from Alaska. And I lived in Miami, which was completely different from all those things. Like all those things sort of informed who I am. And so, yeah, like I don't know.
I think it's easy to forget that when you see someone that looks like you, that, oh, that must be like me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that. I get stereotype expectations from everybody, you know, not, mm-hmm. you know, not just, you know, white people or it's black people too. Like there's this expectation that I'm going to be, you know, sassy black chick or whatever. And it's like, that's not me at all. Like I'm nerdy, goofy girl.
Well, and I think that that's the thing that, I think we all should learn from being on the internet is that mm-hmm. People, not just black people, but people are not a monolith.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm not here to meet your expectations.
Right. I'm here to be myself.
Exactly.
And to be authentic.
My wife, when she came, she's from Zimbabwe. When mm-hmm. she came over here, when she was like 19, she mm-hmm. stopped in Germany. First trip on a plane.
Yay, Germany.
Yay, Germany. Stops in Germany. Mm-hmm. Freaking out. First time out of the country. She's out of like a 6-hour layover. She looks around and what does she do? She goes to the first black person she could find.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, hi. Cause they speak English in Zimbabwe.
Right,
I think she did it with an English accent.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, you know, I'm Mo and I'm here and I'm looking for, and he did not speak a word of English.
Yep.
Cause he was a German guy.
Yep.
And he was not interested in talking to my wife. And nope. He just basically was very German, with all due respect to my German friends and listeners, and walked away. And she was just left with this. And now 20 years later, my wife still talks about this. She's like, and that's when I realized how big the world was.
Yep.
And
we're
how
not all the same.
Just not everyone who looks like me is
look
my friend.
The same. Yep. And not everybody who looks different is an enemy. In fact, most of my friends look different than me. And I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I enjoy diversity.
Yeah. And you wrote about that as you kind of go from place to place, the demographic changes. You know, it was one extreme when you were in Alaska, and it was another mm-hmm. extreme at Home Depot. And then you're still in Atlanta, but then you show up at Google.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. people don't believe me when I tell this story about how I got hired at Google. This was in 2006. And at that point, Google was still putting ads on Craigslist. So I had just discovered Craigslist because, you know, Craigslist had been around for a while at that point, but, you know, it wasn't really big in Atlanta. And I'd heard about it online. I was like, oh, let me check this out. And so I'm poking around on Craigslist and I see this opening for a job at Google. And I thought it was completely fake. Like, I just, like, that's not real.
But you answered it anyway.
I sure did. And I, you know, I sent in my resume and, like, a few months later, they contacted me, and I still was thinking, this isn't real. This is fake, you know. And I'd use one of my throwaway email addresses. Like, it was
even in 2006, you knew that it was like, yeah, it's all lies on Craigslist.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Craigslist, no. Nobody hires on Craigslist. Get out of here. Be serious. But, yeah, so I responded to an ad on Craigslist and went through the whole interview process, which was a lot, and ended up getting hired.
And could you believe it? Was this like a dream or is it like being swept away?
It wasn't even a dream. Like I never dreamed of working at Google because that just seems so far off. Like Google is in California and I'm in Atlanta. Like I didn't expect Google to have an office in Atlanta. Yeah. So no, it wasn't a dream. It was just like an unbelievable experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you got that though, it didn't seem like that was the most diverse way a place of thinking. Like it was, even though it was in Atlanta, it was not Home Depot.
No, it was not Home Depot. No, it wasn't. I think the sales side was a little bit more diverse than the eng side.
Mm-hmm. Engineering side?
Yeah, the engineering side. But engineering was, you know, not diverse at all. It was mostly homogenous. I mean, there were some, you know, Hispanic people, I believe, but.
Would that make you more comfortable? If you're in a group and you're the only black woman and it's like 10 white guys and you.
Yep.
And let's say a couple, like you just said, well, there may be a couple Hispanic people. Does any brown face in a storm make you feel like, it's okay. Like there's so and so.
No,
it doesn't help, does it?
No, not really. No. It's,
how do you explain that sense of isolation to a random white dude?
It's hard to explain, right? Like, cause you try to say, okay, imagine yourself being amongst a group of black people, but that's not the reality.
It's a different thing.
Yeah. And, you know, still a white dude being amongst a group of black people, like you still know that somewhere else you are still the majority.
Well,
like,
that's the description of privilege, isn't it? You can always just leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I thought I got it because, you know, I've got all these black friends and I hang out with my black friends. Mm-hmm. This is 15, 20 years ago. But then, I went to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And we stayed there for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the street with my wife and everyone is staring at us.
Yeah.
Like, cause what is going on over there?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So then we tried an experiment because my wife is cool like that. I stepped into an alleyway so no one could see me.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of, so I stood there for 5 or 10 minutes and we watched the street move on.
Right.
And my wife disappeared.
Yeah.
And she said, I've disappeared. I'm invisible now. No one is looking at me.
Yeah.
And then we switched. And then I stood in the middle of the street.
And everyone was looking.
And I'm 3,000 miles from home and the government is black, the police are black, like that was the closest I could get. But even then, a month or two later, I got on a plane and I flew back here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the closest I ever got to that I'm not in Kansas anymore moment. And the only way I can describe it and is it pushed on my eyes. It pushed against the, you know, that headache that you get right between the eyes and underneath your brow. And it was just like, oh, every day. Like I was looking for anybody to give a nod to. I understood what the nod was about.
Right. Just like the look of recognition, right? Like, just like, hey, I see you.
There's an old white man across the street.
Yeah.
How are you doing? He didn't want to talk to me. He's old Zimbabwean. I don't want to talk to an American guy.
Yeah.
that tension, what is that? That it's a stress that just
it's
doesn't
stress.
Go away.
Yes. It's a constant, constant stress. And it's hard to explain that level of stress. Like stress is a baseline, right? Like I don't remember a time where I wasn't stressed.
Is it a stress of not being welcome? Because some white person might be listening to this and be going, I don't get it. right? We like her. She's great. She's good at her job. Why is she so stressed?
It's not being welcomed. It's just, I don't want to call this microaggressions because I don't consider them aggressions, but like you said, being stared at, like when you're standing in a building full of people who don't look like you and, mm-hmm. you know, my desk in my building before last was on a major like walkway.
Right.
So all the people walking by, right, are just staring. And I mean, granted, I'm a 6 foot tall black woman, so.
Sure. And they're not staring like in a she needs to leave kind of way. They're just
right.
Like,
it's just like, oh, that's unexpected.
There you go.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, huh.
This is like a double take. It's just like they're walking like, oh, hello.
Yeah. Like you're different. And that's what it is. It's like, I am different. I cannot disappear. I am always visible.
Yes.
I do not have the luxury of anonymity. Like if I'm having a bad day, I don't get to just like hide. And I'm always visible.
Right.
Always.
Because if that day you come to work with a sour face because you're upset about whatever, you know, your cat's mm-hmm. sick, you come mm-hmm. to, and they're like, oh, she's pissed off about something, right? People will read into that because you're the only angry black woman on this, that day.
The angry black woman. I hate that stereotype, drives me up the wall.
But don't you feel like when you go to work, if you're not happy, then people are going to look at you and assume this or that?
Yeah. I don't know if I don't look happy, but I know that I feel like people are going to assume that I'm the angry black woman if I say things that are angry-ish, right? Like not necessarily negative, but like if I am critical of something, it's just like in the back of my head, I'm like, are they thinking that this is angry black woman or are they accepting my feedback as a coworker?
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that.
No, but stereotypes are dangerous because they make it easy to dismiss valid feelings mm-hmm. as stereotypes. Let's say something bad happened to the build. They broke the build and you get mm-hmm. angry. Mm-hmm. They can dismiss that valid technical fact that they broke the build and you're angry about it mm-hmm. and just say, oh, well, you know, the angry black woman, there you go.
Yeah.
Right? Or whatever other drunk Irishman or whatever stereotype. All you have to do is meet that stereotype once and you've given an excuse for people to minify you.
Yeah. Into that stereotype.
Yeah. And then you lose your legitimacy.
Yeah. And also a little bit, I think, of your personhood. Because you stop being the person, you become the stereotype.
Does that make it hard to remember who you are? Do you have to do you go home to remember who you are or?
No, I don't think I go home to remember who I am. I mean, to be honest, like here, there's really not much of a respite. Like that's why the whole bit about Oakland, right? Because when I was in Oakland, it's like, oh, this is what it's like to be in a diverse environment. And again, like I don't mean just like around black people. I mean around everybody, right? Like the guy I was dating in Oakland was a white guy and his best friend was Asian. And, you know, we would hang out and it was just like, you know, Rainbow Coalition time, like Benetton ad, like that's the sort of diversity I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I live in Portland, which mm-hmm. is not known for being diverse, mm-hmm. Although there are pockets. But mm-hmm. when I was in New York last week, and every time I go to New York, I'm like, why don't I live in New York? Like, mm-hmm. this is where I'm supposed to be. And that's where I realized that the television show Friends was just complete crap because they hung out for 8 years, 5 white friends.
Yep.
And they never met anybody of color at all. And they were in Manhattan.
Oh, no.
Oh, there was someone. Except for Aisha Tyler.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, the one Aisha black Tyler girlfriend. In season 6 or something.
Yep.
but it's just like, and for people who are listening who may have made it this far, but still think that this is a bunch of garbage, it's that your life is more full when you have such a diverse bunch of friends, and you might have all white friends, but they might still be diverse. You might have mm-hmm. people from other countries, other religions, other cultures,
right?
You know, converted Muslim, who knows, but they are people with different viewpoints.
Right. And yeah, that's really important. And so, yeah, like just being amongst, you know, diverse people, diverse backgrounds, you know, I really enjoy that. So I would like to have more of that. Hence my move to Oakland in the future.
So you've decided that Oakland is where you want to live?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I've picked out a house I want to buy.
Awesome.
Like, yeah, it's weird because for a long time I used to say I'm not setting down roots in the Bay Area. It's ridiculous. Like, the home prices here are too much. But, like, Oakland is the first place I've felt a sense of real community. Like, I felt it some in Atlanta, but it was not, like, it didn't feel like home. Mm-hmm. Oakland feels like home, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to live there. So, yeah, I picked out a house.
Would you do me a favor and mm-hmm. go to your Medium article?
I will do this.
And would you read that last paragraph for me as we close?
I will do this also. I'm waiting for it to load.
No worries, because it's a powerful article, and I think that it said a lot, and it spoke to a lot of people of all colors and all mm-hmm. creeds. Mm-hmm. But I appreciated the last paragraph particularly.
Yeah. I will read that for you. I know this. I am not my job. I am not my industry or its stereotypes. I am a Black woman who happens to work in the tech industry. I don't need to change to fit within my industry. My industry needs to change to make everyone feel included and accepted. And I meant that about everyone, like not just me. I don't mean the industry needs to just change to include and accept Black women. Mm-hmm. We need to include and accept everyone. Everyone needs to feel like they are free to be their authentic selves.
And if we do that, we will all be better for it.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Erica Joy, for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.